When you get to the third round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, you really don't expect a team to go out and win 8-0.
No, but, you don't think, eh?
No, but I guess if you were going to pick one team out of the whole bunch that might be capable of that, I think it might be Tampa Bay. They do have the offensive firepower to be able to do that. But it was kind of tough to watch. It was a royal blowout that, in the course of a regular season, okay, it happens from time to time. It doesn't mean much. Does it mean more when it's a playoff game and especially essentially semifinal game?
It doesn't. In fact, I think you can downplay it even more, Bob. I did not see Barry Trotz's Zoom call after the game, but I can guarantee he said, listen, if whether we lose 1-0 or 8-0, we only lost one game. What I watched in the third period last night was an Islander team trying to set the stage for game 6, using players to push Tampa forwards around and Tampa forwards pushing back. I don't think it means one hoot if it's 8-0 or 1-0. In fact, I would tell you that it might be more inspiring for the Islanders to be embarrassed the way they played, as opposed to having a goalless game halfway through the third and Tampa scoring that one goal and losing a heartbreaker in Tampa, knowing you could have gone home and won the series. Now they know they get to go home. They get to play in front of those crazy fans and try to extend the series to 7.
Well, the only game that I can recall during these playoffs that was anywhere near comparable was Colorado's 7-1 win in game 1 over Vegas. And we all know what happened there. Vegas came back and won the series in 6. Mm-hmm. So I suppose you're right. It probably doesn't mean a whole lot. But was there anything in this game that you saw that Tampa was able to expose in the Islanders that before that they weren't able to?
I think the one thing you saw was, for the first time in a while, Steven Stamkos contributing a lot more than he has of recent. And I think that that's probably the one satisfying thing for John Cooper and for Steven, that, he was 45 seconds into the game. He was a force. He scored on the power play on the off wing. I think that if you're walking away from it, we've talked about this a few times, how deep Tampa is. Guys like Yanni Gord and Alex Killorn have been so good for them. But to see Stamkos, who's supposed to be one of their stars, the captain of the team, contributing as much as he did last night with 2 goals and an assist, I think that's a big part of what will be positive for John Cooper.
One of the other dialogues that has come up, and you and I have seen this repeatedly and discussed this almost every year, that when you get to NHL playoff time, is the change in the way, or apparent change in the way the game is called.
Oh, and there's no apparent. It is different, Bob. There's no question.
Officials tend to put their whistles away. They allow stuff to go on that clearly is against the rules, that clearly they call during the vast majority of the regular season, if not all the time. And there seems to be this code that when you get to the playoffs, it has to be an extraordinarily overt and potentially impactful foul in order to be called. Mm-hmm. I've never understood this. Perhaps you can explain it to me as a hockey puck, why this happens.
I'm not sure the why. I do understand, I think, a bit about the how. And I think that this is, the general managers meet with hockey operations and with the league office at least twice a year, in November and then again in March. Officiating is always a big discussion point. This standard that is pushed upon the teams in the playoffs is one that general managers endorse. It's not just Gary, Bill, and Coley and Stephen Walkham sitting there saying we're changing the standard. This is a consensus within the game of hockey that everybody buys into, that we want playoff hockey to be played at with a higher tempo, with a tougher standard. And when I mean tougher standard, I mean it's tougher for the players to play through it. It's not a question of calling everything. The old concept of letting the players decide on the ice is what managers and the league office want at this point. It doesn't make it right. It infuriates everybody outside of that small group of 50 people. But it has proved to be over the years, the genesis of some exciting, tense, graphic hockey that people seem to like. Other people hate it because of the officiating, but I do think that it does create a higher level of drama and entertainment for most people.
Well, I must tell you that, and you know, I acknowledge to being a casual observer of this game, but I mean, you watched last night and there were 20 times during the game you'd say, why isn't that a penalty? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe 50 times. It's literally every few seconds something happens that you have come to understand is worthy of a penalty, whether it's a cross check, a hold, a hook, interference. Those are the kinds of things that they don't call. And you get to the point where you realize it's going to have to be an overt penalty for it to be called. And even when that's called, you go, well, that's happened 5 times in this game,
yeah,
and wasn't called the other 4 times. And therein lies the problem. And this whole notion that you can point a finger at the general managers and say, well, they're to blame, as if they have control
Hey, Bob, they have a lot more control than you realize. But
well, I guess I know blame, they do, but I don't know why.
Because I think that there's an appreciation within hockey operations and the league office that says these guys are constructing the teams, and these guys in theory are the 31 next year 32 of the best minds in the game, and we better respect what they think. The other thing is In my opinion, the penalty that was missed, the high sticking penalty that was missed, Marchessault on Corey Perry, that put a really good slice into Corey's nose, that exacerbated it, because that was a mistake. Those guys screwed up. That was a 5-minute major penalty that any one of those 4 officials on the ice could have called. Anyone
should have called. Not could have, should have.
Yeah, that's right.
And how did they miss that? They chose not to.
That really, in my mind, has exacerbated all of this, because when you have a standard that is this high, if you want to put it that way, if you do screw up one, it just amplifies it tenfold. And that's the problem.
Well, it now raises the question again of what kind of team do you build if you're a general manager, if you understand that this is what's going to happen when the season matters most, which is during the playoffs. And the prime example of this is the Toronto Maple Leafs, a team that was soft, was built based on skill, with almost complete disregard to toughness, physical play, pushback.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Kyle Dubas went out and tried to get a couple of guys who he thought it was too little, mm-hmm, because this notion of being tough is not an individual thing. It's a team thing. Everybody has to buy into it. When you get to the playoffs, you need, if one guy going running amok and trying to hit everybody in sight, whether it's a Foligno or whoever, isn't going to impact the game, because the other team probably has 10 guys, 15 guys,
right,
that are willing to do that. See the Montreal Canadiens, who have shown a willingness to be physical. Very uncharacteristic of past Montreal teams, who almost invariably went for skill and speed. But this team is prepared to grind, and mm-hmm, they are having success with it.
But Bob, you know, if you look at the last 3 or 4 Stanley Cup champions, the St. Louis Blues, the Washington Capitals, the Tampa Bay Lightning, teams that get to the Stanley Cup final, like the Boston Bruins. This is no surprise.
Of course, no secret. Surprise.
This is no secret. And that's why you know, every once in a while you get a manager like Kyle who thinks he can try to reinvent the wheel. And then when he realizes he can't and he tries to fix it, it's going to have to take him some time to do it. You know, and we joke about it. The one type of person that the Toronto Maple Leafs didn't have was a guy like Brendan Shanahan, who was that type of player. Could score, but could also, I mean, he wasn't a wild man, but he did everything that Tom Wilson could do 10 times better. So,
well,
that's how good Brendan was. That's why Brendan's in the Hockey Hall of Fame. So from that perspective, the world hasn't changed that much, and you have to plan to play playoff hockey. The endurance that it takes to play playoff hockey in so many different ways. And it's not 100% skill. There's a bit of intimidation. There's a bit of physical play. Sure. There's lots of everything that you need your team to have a personality of in order to win the Stanley Cup.
Well, we'll have time to talk about more about this. We have at least one more round. Well, we do have one more round. We don't have at least. We have exactly one more round after this one is complete, and of course it is not. We're going to switch gears a little bit today. The Canadian Football League announced recently that they're going to go back on the field starting in, I don't know, about 6 weeks, something like that.
August the 5th, kickoff.
Yeah. Well, that's about 6 weeks, I think. And a somewhat shortened schedule, and we'll see how many fans wind up being in the stands. But how do you put a team together? This is a first where an entire league shut down for a year. Mm. Didn't play in a bubble, didn't play limited schedule, didn't do anything. And how do you start from scratch? Mike O'Shea, the head coach of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, will join us when we continue after these messages. He was a first-round draft choice. He was a great player in the Canadian Football League, a Grey Cup champion, and now a head coach. He, along with the rest of the league, about to make their comeback. Mike O'Shea of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers is with us. Well, you look about the same. How do you feel?
20 pounds heavier and a lot weaker. The sitting behind a desk watching film probably hasn't done me any good.
Well, this is, I mentioned it before you came on, Michael, that nobody's gone through this. In that I know of in any sport around the world. I mean, there may be some places, but you guys literally shut down for an entire year. So there's no way to know what this is going to be like coming back. But I know you've talked to your players. You probably stayed in touch with them over the past 14, 15 months, however long. Are you comfortable that these guys will pick it up right where they left off, just like riding a bicycle?
Well, I'm certainly comfortable with our veterans, and I'm also comfortable with the fact that it may not look exactly the same. And I also am quite prepared to give guys a little bit of extra time to make sure they can stay healthy and start the season healthy. So I don't think it would be very smart for us to come in and think we're going to hit the ground running and just start pounding away. So Al Couture, our head of our wellness and head therapist, Braden Miller, our strength and conditioning guy, also an athletic therapist. We've got a great working relationship in terms of the feedback they'll give me, players are at, and the feedback I give them and where we're at as a football team and what we need. So we will come up with a good plan that you know, allows the players to, I'm not saying ease into it, because it's not like we want to give them a break, but we certainly don't want a rash of injuries to start training camp.
Exactly.
You just recover from it. And with COVID, you really can't bring more players in, you know, on a whim, because they all have to quarantine if you bring them in from the States. So you got to be careful, and you got to balance the work you do, and you got to, I'm not saying give them all a break, but you have to have some understanding that this is different, and what they've gone through of probably over 600 days from being on the field last. With the way it worked out with them not being paid and the amount of guys that are working in the off season to support their families, you got to have some understanding, and we'll get there by the end of training camp. We'll be ready to play game one, but I'm not going to stress too much if a guy looks or breathes a little heavy on the first day of practice. You know, we're going to make sure that once again, the health of the players come week one is, you know, first and foremost.
Mike, what kind of turnover will your roster be from 2 years ago?
Yeah, we've been pretty good. We've lost two guys in the defensive backfield, one to the NFL and then one to the BC Lions. And then, basically our offense will be intact. Most of our defense will be intact. Now, wow. Every year you expect competition and we'll see what that brings. I do think that, you know, there are going to be some players that when it comes time to answer the bell and start hitting, it'll be different for them. In their mind, it won't feel the same. So I'm waiting to see what that brings our camp. I mean, there's already a few retirements around the league. So we'll see what that does to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. But in terms of turnover, right now we're looking pretty good. And we're as veteran and as intact on the offense as you'll ever see.
Actually, you just reminded me of one thing. Would you be prepared for one of your guys who hasn't played in those 600 days or whatever it is to come to camp and a week later saying, "Coach, I can't do this anymore"?
Prepared is interesting. Hmm. I think it'll happen. I don't know how you prepare for it because you don't know what position it is. You don't know. You know, we're prepared in that we always bring in great competition behind everybody. So, our scouting department, our assistant general managers, Ted and Danny do a great job of filling the pipeline. So we'll be prepared in that regard. On a personal level, it's hard to prepare for that because the locker room is so vitally important to success. And when you remove a piece out of the locker room and when you remove a veteran presence and the knowledge and experience they have, obviously you'll miss it.
With Mike O'Shea. So there was a time, and I know you're aware of this, where in all sports, players would arrive at camp and get in shape. They would use camp to get in shape. Now that may be a long time ago, but the notion of being in shape literally 12 months a year for professional athletes is pretty common. And yet in the Canadian Football League, as you alluded to, Mike, many players, out of necessity, economic necessity, work at other jobs during the off season. Now you've had guys for over a year not playing football and many of them working. Do you expect your guys to be in the kind of shape you would have expected prior to the 2019 season when they arrive in a couple of weeks?
No, I don't really. I would like it. And I have respect for both sides, the guys that have to work and make ends meet. I have a lot of respect that they make that decision. And the guys that have been able to just go to the gym every day and train, that I got a lot of respect for that too, because they're putting that part of their career first. And they probably don't have the responsibility that some of the other guys have, but I wouldn't expect them to all be in the kind of shape you need to be. I think it's very hard in football to be in that kind of shape because you just can't simulate all the contact. You know, you can do sprints and throw yourself on the ground and get yourself up. And just the idea of getting up off the ground changes your training, but you can't have the physical punishment that these guys are going to take in game one. You can't have that in the off season. So, you know, football more than anything, I know hockey would be the same way as a contact sport. But the high speed collisions, you just can't ever duplicate in the off season plan. Right. So they're never like that. I do expect we need a little more time to get them in the kind of just running shape that they'll need to be. I mean, our Brad Miller and Al have done a great job of sending them programs and having them peak at different times and explaining the importance and the science behind, you know, the volume of running that they need to do, but it still doesn't make for the bumps and bruises of everyday football life, right?
Will you simplify, sorry, John, will you simplify your offense at least initially in order to ease the guys in? No. Are you going to go full, you're going to go full bore?
Yeah. I mean, not with the contact, obviously, but of course. The playbook. Yeah. They've learned the playbook three times by now.
Yeah.
Not much time. Right. So I think we'll be way ahead in the installation process, the learning process of what the playbook holds in store for the season. And we'll be a little bit behind, I imagine, in terms of the physical preparedness.
Will this be harder for the offensive side of the ball or the defensive side of the ball?
I don't know. I've never thought about it like that. I think there's contact on both sides. The volume, you know, there's less contact, let's say, as an outside receiver, but there's more running. So position by position, if they followed the plan that we've laid out for them, that our medical staff has laid out for them, then they should be in pretty good shape. And then we'll have to adjust based on the amount of contact they can handle early on. I think the contact is going to be the issue. I think when your body doesn't have that physical stressor, that physical pain on a regular basis, I think for a lot of guys, especially on defense, you miss it. But on either side of the ball, it's going to take a little bit more adjustment for your body to say, okay, yeah, I do enjoy this. You know, let's hit again. It's going to take a little more time for that.
Well, did you, when you were playing as a linebacker, did you hate camp?
No.
You liked it?
Yeah.
Mike liked to hit.
I wasn't a huge hitter by any stretch of the imagination. I liked showing up at camp and seeing all the guys and getting that first meeting over with and getting on the field and running around. And I liked assessing where I was after my off-season training program. I liked saying, okay, yeah, I had a great off-season. I feel fantastic out here. I liked pushing the boundaries. And I liked going home at night, feeling tired, playing a game of crib and going to bed tired, exhausted, you know? I can't say I liked everything about it. You know, day 12 might have been a drag. But for the most part, getting back in the locker room setting and seeing your teammates again was, you know, something you hoped for, you know, basically from January 1st on, you know, you were missing.
So the COVID protocols, what will be different when the guys show up? Is there much different than a regular camp?
Yeah, practice won't be that much different. It may look a little different based on the spacing required on the practice field in between drills, in between plays, but the actual during the play in practice, it's not going to look different. I think the main challenge right now, as I see it, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot more that I'm too stupid to realize, but the main challenge that I see for our team is how do you build that team again when you're so physically distanced, when you're not allowed to shake hands after practice or after a hard rep, when you're not allowed to, you know, are you supposed to be helping a guy up off the ground? Are you supposed to be, you know, are you shoulder to shoulder when you eat dinner? You know, are you playing crib at night? You're not, you know, you're not sitting around the card table at night talking about what happened in the off season and how your family's doing and reacquainting yourself. You're in your own room, your door's closed, you're on your own, right? And I believe as the season progresses, when these restrictions lift and when we have more and more guys fully vaccinated, we will be able to start to build that chemistry needed to win a championship. But camp will be different in that regard.
Yeah. With Mike O'Shea, we'll take a quick break and come back with more after these messages. It's Bob McCallum. It's John Shannon. We're with the head coach of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, Mike O'Shea. You mentioned the vaccination process. Have you, can you as an organization encourage your players, particularly your US players, but not necessarily, to get vaccinated? And have you, can you tell us about any response you've gotten from the players? I'm sure there are those, as there are in society everywhere, that are resisting the notion of taking the vaccine.
Yeah, every team's going to have, well, I shouldn't speak for every team, but I believe every team is going to have players that choose not to get vaccinated. As an organization, as a league, we can't force anybody to get the vaccine. I think the league, or I believe the league and our team has done a great job in educating the players. So we've had, quote numbers, I'd be hard pressed, but we've had players that have said initially that they were not prepared to be vaccinated. And after a pretty thorough education program with league doctors, with our team doctors, with our training staff, with conversations with other players as they learn about the science more, we've had more and more players that didn't want to at the beginning jump in and say they're going to get vaccinated, and they have. So I think it's a work in progress. I do believe we will hit a time frame or a time point in the season where no more players will get vaccinated. Whatever we have at that point, whatever that point is,
that'll be it. Yeah.
Is what we're going to have.
Yeah.
And you have to respect that. And, I was asked a question about, do I think it's going to cause a divide in the locker room? And I don't. I think that we stock our locker room with intelligent men that will have lively debate about their choices, and they'll leave that debate with great respect and a better knowledge of how their other teammates feel. So I think it's positive that way. I would like the entire team vaccinated. We've shown them, as other leagues have, the benefits of being vaccinated, what that means to them, how their restrictions get lifted as more and more players on their team and that are in close contact become vaccinated. I think some players have made the decision now to be vaccinated because they see the restrictions that may get lifted as very positive, and now outweighing their reason why they might not have wanted to get the jab to start. So I think the idea of them being allowed to simply have their teammates over and have meals with them and celebrate after a game with them, after a win, those things are important, and, maybe turn the tide for a few players for sure.
Is there, so the league put out an actual list of, here are the 10 things you can do if you're vaccinated, here are the 10 things you can't do?
Well, I know the NFL has put out a list. The CFL has basically a potential. Like if it would have to be approved by the return to play plan, and these are possibilities. I think what we've done is shown them what other leagues were able to do. Mm-hmm. So if X number of percent of your team was vaccinated, it allowed the team to have a dinner. It allowed the team to do this. It allowed to, not physically distance, or, in a meeting, or possibly if you were fully vaccinated and someone did get COVID on the team, you weren't a close contact. So you get tested and then you could move on very quickly without having to quarantine possibly. So there are certainly a number of benefits that other leagues have shown their players that I believe the CFL would follow suit with.
You were paid to be a head coach, not a virologist. It's kind of, your job description's changing.
Well, I like to use my degree once in a while. I did study microbiology at University of Guelph, and virology and systematic bacteriology were two of my favorite courses. That's a long time ago, and I'm not pretending at all to know anything about it now, but I like the science behind it.
Well, so let me dig a little bit deeper here. I'm going to hypothesize, if I'm on the management team of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, regardless of what the role is,
then the team's in trouble, Bob, actually.
Well, they might very well be. But that having been said, you're going to bring in more than a few U.S. football players to try out for your team. And if it's me, O'Shea, I'm thinking twice, three times, maybe five times as to whether I wanted to bring in a guy who hasn't been vaccinated and is refusing to be vaccinated. has that, and there's no discrimination intended in that. I just see that as potentially problematic, more problematic. And I've if I've got two guys, one's vaccinated, one's not, and they seem to be of approximately comparable ability, I'll tell you, all of a sudden now I'm looking at that vaccinated guy. Where are you on that issue? Where's your team on that issue?
Yeah, we haven't crossed that bridge yet. I know how much effort Wade Miller and his staff have put into this return to play plan on a CFL level, not just on a Blue Bomber level. I completely respect Wade's thought behind that. And if he were to share that point of view of yours or that question you've given, I could completely understand that. And I imagine that may come up because the CFL obviously can't afford to stop, right? Once we start, we have to do everything we can to make sure we're going still, yeah. Right? Any kind of interruption to the season, to a shortened season is going to be, we'll get through it, but it'll be tough, right? So the only answer I can give you, Bob, is that, you know, that may come up and then we'll have to make a good decision for the club then. I mean, I do think that a high percentage of our players will be vaccinated by the time we start the season.
So camp starts on the 10th, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah. The players are in quarantining on July 2nd and camp will start on the 10th.
So you're finalizing travel for a few of these guys that are coming from the United States right now then, correct?
Yeah, definitely.
So how has that, will that, you know, the thing about Canadian football, and you lived it particularly, I mean, with the Argos and the Tiger Cats, there was always that Labor Day airlift. The teams brought players in. How will that change this year when you think about what's going to happen? Because hopefully by Labor Day this year, and you'll be in week 5 of the season, there won't be as many restrictions.
Yeah. Well, the contingency plan for that has already been laid. We are allowed an extra 5 players per team on the practice roster.
Oh.
You just really won't be able to bring players in. You know, the airlift doesn't just happen on Labor Day. It happens in training camp when if you start out of the gate too hard and 4 or 5 receivers go down with hamstrings because they're not prepared, you bring in another pile of receivers because as soon as those 4 or 5 receivers go down, the existing receivers take all the reps and then they start getting hurt. So the best thing to do is just slow practice down and cut out practices. So you need to fly in all these extra guys. So the airlift actually – that kind of replacement of players happens early. So, you know, this year we've been granted an extra 5 players on the practice roster to ensure that anything that happens in training camp, you can cover because you're not just bringing them in.
No.
So help me with this 14 game regular season this year.
Yep.
And preseason games, 1, 2,
none. But you're allowed to practice. Now you're allowed to have a joint practice with another team. So, pending approval, we will be practicing one day with the Saskatchewan Roughriders.
So you'll go through some, you'll play some kind of an informal scrimmage, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, we'll have a regular practice period, but it'll all be competitive against another colored jersey, which will be better for us to evaluate, obviously, the young guys we have coming in.
So who's the best team in the league right now? You can't pick the Bombers.
Well, but they are, technically.
You know, I always marvel at that, you know. Paper before the training camp starts. It's, I don't, because teams have, some teams have more turnover than we have. So,
yeah.
You know, obviously, playing Hamilton last year in the Grey Cup and them having the best record in the regular season and their best record they've ever finished with. Coach Steinauer, Coach O, he's obviously a great coach and they have a good staff and they have a lot of their players back also. So I guess you'd have to say, if I'm not allowed to say us,
you're not.
But every team gets better every year. Right. And then stuff happens and you see where the standings finish out at.
How much interaction would you have had with Orlando and Rick Campbell or Dave Dickinson? Lots of talk in the offseason.
A fair bit more with O than, you know, because we play together for so long than anybody else. But yeah, we, you know, the coaches sort of keep in touch, and you got questions and you got little anecdotes that you share every once in a while.
What's your kicking game going to look like this year?
Perfect. It's a lot of pressure to put on a kid coming out of University of Western, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, we drafted Mark. You know, he's a very accomplished kicker in the CIS. He does all three. We got a lot of confidence in him. I don't believe that nowadays with kickers, the jump from the university system to pros is a jump that scares kids anymore. They're so focused, and they're kickers nowadays, the training they go through, the pressure they put on themselves to make kicks. Like if you're making kicks through our uprights from our hashes in the CIS, what's 30,000 fans going to make a difference, right? Because they don't hear that noise come game time. And now you're getting paid, but I don't know that that really puts a lot of different pressure on these kids. Now, I mean, I'll have to get to know them better, and then, you know, maybe I'm saying something different, but I just believe that they train so hard for those pressure situations that I don't think the jump is a big leap. It's not like he's a deep back coming from University of Western Ontario. Now he's covering, now he's covering Nick Dembski, or now he's covering, you know, Darvin Adams, mm-hmm. right? He's a kicker who's kicked. He's not adjusting to the speed difference of the game, right? So I understand in hockey, you know, you come from the OHL or WHL, and you might jump up there and go, wow, the speed is different. I got to pick up this or that. And the defensive play may be different, or, you know, how hard you got to go on the back check is probably different because that forward is faster than the forwards you went against. But there's no speed difference to a kicker in the CFL game unless he misses and he's got to try and tackle a returner who's, you know, speedy B, right? That's the only difference. So I don't see that. In fact, the snaps are going to be better. The holds are going to be better. Those things are going to make them more efficient. So maybe I'm missing the point on this, but I just have a lot of faith that these guys can come in and do it.
Well, this is theoretical, but, you know, in the days when the football in the U.S. was different than the football in the CFL, you bring an American kid up here and maybe there's a period of adjustment just because the football is slightly different. But that's not the case anymore, right, Mike?
No, it really isn't. And the major difference for American kickers and punters really is the width of the field. The hashes, so where the angle they have to kick from.
Yep.
Uprights are the same width, but the angle they have to kick from changes. So you have to see a kid who, you know, gets the physics of it fairly quickly and can adjust that kick he's got to make. And then for punting, it's the directional aspect. I'm sure in the U.S. they punters because it makes your cover teams better. But I do believe that, you know, their focus is hang time more than anything in punting in the U.S. so that they can draw the fair catch, right?
Right.
That, I've always found that the biggest adjustment when we bring an American kicker up is working with them to how they walk their line before they punt, and them believing that they still have a lot of yards left to kick directionally to the sideline and to just keep on trying to pound that sideline instead of the ball just floating down the middle with a high hang time when there's no fair catch and the returner gets the 5-yard halo, there's going to be a return every time, right? So that's been the hardest adjustment I find for punters is really working the line they walk before they kick.
Well, when you played, there weren't very many American-born punters or kickers anyway. That was one place where you had the Canadians had an advantage because you didn't want to lose an import position to a kicking position, did you?
Correct. Yeah. And the rosters have changed so dramatically since then, so...
Well, I know you haven't been sitting around on your keister doing nothing for the last 18 months or so, but O'Shea, time to go back to work, like serious work.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're happy about that.
Oh, just having the coaches around and talking football. The simplest little football conversations brought so much joy to our coaching staff. It's because there's only so much electronic communication that really gets the intent of the message understood, right? It's just lost. The passion is lost sometimes through Zoom.
Grey Cup is in Hamilton on the 14th of December. That'd be a nice way to finish the season.
Well, it's certainly going to be warmer than the 14th of December in Manitoba. Anybody complaining about December Grey Cup in Ontario, I'm sure it's going to be like a November Grey Cup out west, you know? So we're looking forward to
it. Before we let you go, lean back a little bit. Is that a hip shirt you got, t-shirt you got on? Yeah, you are. Yeah. You're one of those, huh? You're a hip fan.
Oh, I remember exactly where I was when I heard Boots and Hearts for the first time.
Wow.
Exactly.
Well, you know, my winery makes the wine for the Tragically Hip. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make sure you get a bottle out there and hang it. You can drink it if you like. It's pretty good. But what most people wind up doing, hip fans love memorabilia, and we 70% of the wine we sell, they put it up on their mantle and that's where it stays. So they're pretty dedicated to the band.
Absolutely.
I'm glad to see you're a hip fan. Listen, pal, we wish you the best of luck. Stay safe. You know, you got your guys coming back, and let's keep our fingers crossed that you guys can get through this entire season without any problems or interruptions. Cause I think that's probably the biggest concern. Just get through this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The fans and the players, especially, they deserve this so much to be playing and be back out there doing their job. It's just so exciting for us.
We need the CFL, Mike. We need the CFL. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
Here, here.
Canada does for sure. Absolutely. What an institution.
All the best. And we'll bug you somewhere down the road again. Thanks a lot for doing this.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Mike O'Shea, we'll come back with more after these messages. McCowan, it's Shannon to wrap this thing up, put it in a brown paper bag, leave it on somebody's doorstep.
You know what, Bob? We're going to have to start selling the commercial time again, the paper listen show. Because if I hear Mike O'Shea tell you how great you are one more time, I might have to. It was unbelievable. President of the Bob McCowan fan club.
Well, I can't stop him. He's obviously an intelligent man.
Holy smokes. Oh, the other thing that occurred to me was, and Paul Maurice is obviously a friend of ours, been on a few times, yep. Loves coming on. Mike O'Shea, president of the Bob McCowan Fan Club. I don't think people in Winnipeg really know how lucky they are to have two coaches that are so approachable and can communicate.
Oh my God.
Those two guys are, that's fantastic.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And look, it's from the perspective, we have to acknowledge, it's from the perspective of two guys who, you know, make a living, sort of, talking to people.
Yeah.
And the more receptive they are, the more conversational they are, the better it feels for us. But I'll tell you, if you're a fan, you want to know what your coaches think, what your players think, what your general managers think. And those guys that shy away from the media are not, they're not doing themselves any favors. And applause to Maurice and to O'Shea for being so receptive and so conversational. Well, you know,
look at the week we've had so far. Couldn't get Gibbons to shut up.
Yeah.
Rob Brind'Amour has you and me going through a brick wall.
Yeah.
And now we're all Bomber fans again. You know, so.
So far, so good.
So far, so good.
We hope you enjoyed today's program and you'll come back for more. For Shannon, it's McCowan. Have a swell day or evening, as the case may be, and we'll see.